All right, we're up to slide 15 so far. We can finish this chapter and go on to the next. What we're looking at in blue is an enzyme, and it doesn't matter what the specific enzyme is. In red, as you see, is the substrate. It doesn't matter what it is specifically either, but what is substrate in general? No, the enzyme is speeding up the process. What is substrate? Well, when you say that the enzyme is speeding up the process, what process is it in general? A chemical reaction. And what happens in a chemical reaction in general? Right, but what do we call the chemicals in a chemical reaction? Reactants and products. What is substrate? It's the reactant in a catalyzed reaction. So it's just a different name for it, but the word substrate tells you that it's the thing that actually binds to the enzyme if it's present. It's not a catalyzed reaction unless an enzyme helps it out, because enzymes are catalysts. Okay, so the substrate simply binds to the enzyme. And what this shows you is that, as usual, shape is everything for the function of a protein. For an enzyme, there is somewhere on its surface called the active site that has just the right shape for a particular substrate. This is why enzymes are specific. They don't catalyze just any reaction. They catalyze a specific reaction because a specific substrate is able to bind to the active site. Now, that's one point. But notice this is yet another example of a ligand binding to a protein, right? The substrate is another example of a ligand. And what do I keep telling you is the general consequence of a ligand binding to a protein? Yes, the protein undergoes a conformational change, a change in shape. And in this case, the shape change is such that the substrate, which already fits pretty well into the active site, now has an even better fit with the enzyme. Notice it's kind of wrapping around it. That's called induced fit. To induce means to bring about. So there's a better fit that is induced by the initiation of the binding of the substrate to the enzyme. And that not only makes the enzyme work better as a catalyst, it also excludes other things from interfering more, because it wraps around it very well. Okay, now let's go to 16 and look at the generalized scheme of an enzyme at work. Once again, the example... Well, this isn't a specific example. It doesn't matter what the example is. In general, it's a cycle emphasizing the fact that enzymes are not reactants. They don't get turned into products. They don't get used up. They're reusable. But they have an active site for one or more substrates. In this case, it's two substrates that fit in, but it's a general scheme either way. That causes a shape change, which in some way will reduce the activation energy for the reaction, right? That's how enzymes operate, by making that hill shorter. And they can do that by stressing bonds or by bringing things together in just exactly the right orientation, various ways. But anyway, that happens, and therefore the substrate's turned into product. The product is then released from the enzyme, which changes its shape back into the original form, empty form, allowing it to operate again as long as there's more substrate. So enzymes are reusable. 17, a couple graphs here featuring enzyme traces. Each of these traces shows the effectiveness of the enzyme. Well, the enzyme's job as an enzyme is to speed up the reaction. Therefore, the rate of the reaction shows you how well that's working, right? The faster the reaction, which is the higher point on the graph, the better the job of the enzyme. And the black trace and the red trace are for two different enzymes, basically doing the same job but in two different organisms. The black one's for a human, the red one's for a thermophilic or heat-tolerant bacterium that can tolerate temperatures of boiling water, which would kill most other organisms. And the point here is that any given enzyme, not just these two, has an optimal temperature, a temperature at which it works best. Now, evolution has worked in such a way that we have an enzyme that has an optimal temperature right at 38, which is our body temperature, normal body temperature. The one in the bacterium is doing the same job, but it works well at high 70s, which would kill us. And notice that temperature would completely ruin the enzyme in us. What is it about a change in temperature that is bad for enzymes? Because you can get too low or too high, either one will reduce it from the effectiveness at its optimum temperature. Why does temperature matter? Yes, but why? I'm saying it is true that temperature has to be regulated, but what is the problem with it not being regulated? If the temperature gets too high or too low, why is that a problem for the enzyme? Well, things speed up as they get warmer, but they continue to speed up beyond this point if you get warmer, and notice it goes down. So that doesn't explain everything.
No.
What did I tell you about temperature and proteins in general? Enzymes are proteins.
Oh, it's like irreversible if you go too hot.
What is?
The proteins.
Not the proteins, the shape change. Right? Irreversible shape change is called denaturation. But even a little change in temperature, even if it doesn't destroy the enzyme, will change its shape. And shape is everything. It's what gives the enzyme its function. If it changes shape, the active site won't have the right fit for the substrate. That's why there is an optimum temperature for any given enzyme. And similarly, in the bottom trace, there is an optimum pH. Because as I've said before, temperature and pH are major variables of the environment that can drastically affect protein shape in general, and therefore enzyme shape, because enzymes are proteins. These two enzymes are both from the same organism, a human, but in different parts of the body. They both digest proteins, but the black one is working in the stomach and has an optimal pH below 2, very acidic, right? But that's what the condition is inside the stomach. Whereas once that stuff is expelled from the stomach and put into the small intestine, it's now at a much higher, more neutral pH, which is exactly the optimum pH for this other enzyme that takes over the job. Okay, now to 18. The purple thing is an enzyme in this case, and part A, this normal binding, that's what we've just talked about. Okay, that's just a substrate binding because of its specific shape to a specific enzyme and getting turned into product. But that's not the only thing that can happen. In B, we have an inhibition. Before I get to the particulars of that, though, let me just talk about inhibition. It is part of regulation, enzyme regulation. If you think back to the first slide that showed that pathway, that generalized biochemical pathway, made up of some number of individual reactions. Well, not it's important for one thing to say that there are specific enzymes for individual reactions, but also, since enzymes speed up the reaction so drastically, if you're able to control enzymes, you're able to control pathways. Because if you can turn an enzyme off, even though enzymes aren't required for the reaction, the reaction will slow down so much that it's effectively not happening. This is how we can turn pathways on or off, by controlling enzymes. Okay? And there's two parts to controlling enzymes, two ways, two directions. We can inhibit them, turn them off, basically, at least temporarily, or we can activate them, turn them on, so that they will operate as an enzyme. And that involves various mechanisms, two major mechanisms that we're looking at. Competitive inhibition is, first of all, inhibition. So it is basically taking this enzyme temporarily out of the game. It might as well not be there when it's inhibited, because it's not going to act as an enzyme. But it's competitive inhibition in this case, because this blue thing, which is an inhibitor molecule of some sort, it's some sort of particle, is competing, in a sense, with the substrate for the active site. They're both trying to get into the active site. And the inhibitor is shaped the right way so that it does fit into the active site. But it's not substrate. It's not going to get turned into anything when it happens. All it does is block the active site. And if the active site is blocked, then the enzyme is doing nothing. It can't turn substrate into product. So it effectively turns it off. Now, it's only temporary, because that competitive inhibitor might leave, right? And in that case, the enzyme is ready to go again. This is important because there's another way you could turn off an enzyme, which is to just destroy the enzyme. The problem with that is that if the next moment you need that enzyme, you're going to have to go back to the time and trouble energetically of building a brand new one. You have to go back to the gene, which is the drawing board, basically, of how to build it. It's much better if you can quickly turn enzymes on or off. Okay, so that's competitive inhibition. But there's also non-competitive inhibition, which we see in C. And in this case, the inhibitor, whatever that particle is binding to the enzyme somewhere other than the active site. So they aren't... The substrate and the inhibitor are not competing for the same place on the enzyme. But this is still inhibition. So the active site remains open here when the inhibitor binds somewhere else on the enzyme. Why does that still turn it off? Why won't this enzyme work when the inhibitor is bound somewhere other than the active site?
Is it now, focusing on that part?
Not strictly speaking. What is this non-competitor inhibitor yet another example of?
A ligand.
And what is the general consequence of the binding of a ligand to a protein?
Change
in shape. Now, it's not shown well in this picture, but even though it's not connected to the active site is part of the shape. So it changes the shape of the overall protein, and the active site, even though it remains open, will not be the right shape for the substrate anymore. Okay? So that is still inhibition, but in a different way. Now, another word that we use besides non-competitive is allosteric. Allosteric regulation, we talk about for enzymes. Well, more about that in a second, but hopefully it's clear that if you have competitive regulation, it can only be inhibitive. It doesn't make sense to say competitive activation, right? Because if it's competitive, that means the thing is in the active site, which has to inactivate it, right? Has to inhibit it. It's blocking it. On the other hand, allosteric regulation can either turn on or turn off an enzyme. So it can be inhibitory, but it can also activate an enzyme, which is what's shown in slide 19. And allosteric regulation typically involves enzymes that are multimeric, like this one. It has quaternary structure because it's made of individual polypeptides. It's really, in this specific case, four enzymes in one. Each subunit has an active site, but they're identical. And notice the double arrows of the oscillation here. This unbound enzyme, so it's just an enzyme not bound to anything, goes back and forth between these two forms of drastically different shape. And only one of those two forms has the active site correctly shaped so that it can receive the substrate and act as an enzyme. All right? But while it's oscillating, really nothing's happening because it's not staying in one form or the other. Notice the green and the red things, though. These are allosteric regulators. But the green one is an allosteric activator. And if it binds to the enzyme, notice it's binding to somewhere other than the active site. That's why it's allosteric. If it binds, though, it will lock this into the form that has the right shape on the active sites. It will no longer oscillate, in other words. And therefore, if substrate comes along, it will be able to be catalyzed and turned into product. The inhibitor, on the other hand, binds to a different place, and that will lock it into the inactive form shape. All the active sites are open, but they're into the wrong shape. And so that effectively turns the enzyme off. Okay. Now to 20. I just told you that controlling enzymes is a way that we control pathways, and we can see that here in what is called feedback inhibition. So first of all, it's inhibition, therefore an enzyme is going to be turned off. It's called feedback inhibition because something in the process is feeding back to an earlier part in the process. Now, there's nothing special about this particular example, but in this example, we're using threonine as the initial substrate. That's what we're starting with. And then through a biochemical pathway, one step at a time, in other words, using multiple enzymes, as we've talked about, we eventually get to the end product, which is isoleucine. Basically, it's turning one amino acid into a different kind. But that doesn't matter. What matters here is that it's appropriate to run this pathway if the cell needs isoleucine, right? And if the cell continues to need isoleucine, then this pathway continuing to run is appropriate because the isoleucine that gets produced will continue to be used up by the cell. Eventually, though, there's going to be a time when the cell has had enough. It needs no more isoleucine, right? And therefore, in terms of homeostasis, we have an error created. Too much isoleucine is the error. So this is negative feedback, but a specific case of negative feedback. What happens is that isoleucine, if it's no longer needed by the cell but is continuing to be produced by the pathway, will build up. And therefore, since there's so much of it, it will become more and more likely that isoleucine itself will bind as an allosteric inhibitor to a part of enzyme 1 here, changing the shape of the active site, even though it's not binding to the active site. It's allosteric inhibition, right? So the end product itself acts as an inhibitor. That turns off enzyme 1, so you can't get from threonine to intermediate A. But without A, you can't get to B, can't get to C, D, or you can't get to the end product. So it turns off further production of isoleucine, which is exactly appropriate, right, if you're making too much. Now later on, when the cell uses up what's stockpiled, it will become rarer and rarer in the cell, and therefore it won't be interfering with the enzymes, and it will automatically turn this pathway back on, so it can be used again. So it's a self-regulating process, but it's called feedback inhibition. And that finishes the chapter.